Okay, let's get back into this, and because of the time constraints, well, we've got a couple strategies. One is that we can go to 5:45 because our committee meetings don't start till 6, so we'll add 45 minutes to the end. I talked with Cindy about moving right into the most critical, contentious fishery that the commission has a responsibility for developing policy for, and that is spring Chinook. So we want to change the order here and move right into the spring Chinook discussion. And then we'll take up steelhead. And then, if we have time, we'll take up fall fisheries.
Okay. Well, got this.
Chair, because we're probably not going to do sockeye, I just want to make one comment about sockeye. If this year's return comes in anywhere near forecast, and the forecast is close to 500,000 sockeye returning, almost all of which are going back to the Okanagan, that spectacle of that many fish spawning in the Okanagan watershed, it will rival Bristol Bay in a good year. It will rival the Fraser River in a good year. It'll be something that this basin has not seen in well over half a century. And I just want to encourage all the commissioners, pay close attention to the Bonneville Dam counts the first week of July. And if they get up anywhere over 250,000, 300,000, start making plans for much later in the fall, visiting the Okanagan watershed and seeing something in the Columbia Basin that I think most people thought might never be seen again. It could really be something extraordinary. We're not sure they're going to show up. This is one of those forecasts that's way out there, as Cindy described, in terms of precision and all that. But if it does, this literally could be the sort of thing that you just never thought you might see in the Columbia Basin above 9 dams.
Okay. Commissioner Duvia?
You might also plan ahead, because it's even at the current level of sockeye returning, it's over an hour wait to get in at the launch sites. And that time of year, I think Raleigh would probably concur with most of that.
So. Absolutely. I should bring some boats over there.
I was also suggesting just going to look, too, not just to fish, but just to see that level of abundance in a stream.
Okay, so moving through spring fisheries, I did start off, I'm starting off below Bonneville again, but I did start off with smelt. Is there one above there? Smelt fisheries. We used to have year-round smelt fisheries in the Columbia, season generally December through March in recent years. And sport was generally open. We did have a Ulacon management plan with Oregon, and it has three fishing levels in it. The next slide shows some commercial smelt landings, and you'll notice some blanks in recent years. Right now, the current landscape is they were listed as threatened in the under the ESA in 2010. All of our fisheries are closed, but we do have some research going on. Spring Chinook fisheries, we're going to do the same general thing that we did with summer Chinook, starting in the lower river and moving upstream. Our spring management issues, Willamette ESA fish, Willamette Spring Chinook have a 15% limit. Upriver spring Chinook for non-Indians ranges from 0.5% to 2.7%. Winter steelhead 2%. Willamette winter steelhead 2%. We have the allocation policy from the commission, which shares the ESA impact rates. And then we have the USV Oregon catch balance provision. I have it under commission allocation policy. It's not quite the right place, but what we've done is we came to you and said, here's how we want to implement your policy with the catch balance provision in place. And our management approach is mark selective fishery regulations, time and area closures. This is a summary of your current policy for allocation. And this goes a little bit to, I think, Commissioner Mankin's question a while back. The Washington and Oregon Commission each have their own policies, and they're not the same in terms of the allocation. The allocation changes based, the allocation is based on a matrix, and the matrix has a is abundance-based based on the abundance of Willamette Spring Chinook and Upriver Spring Chinook. Sport share ranges from 50 to 80%, depending on the run size. The commercial share ranges from 15 to 45%. So if you match up the sport and the commercial, for instance, 50 and 45 gives you 95%. And so that's the result of the two commission policies not agreeing. Same with the 80-15. There's 5% that is not allocated. The sport allocation is further shared. 75% of the impacts below Bonneville Dam, the other 25% above Bonneville Dam, which includes Snake River sport fishery and Wanapum tribal fishery. And then I did talk earlier a little bit about the abundance-based matrix. And this is the Spring Chinook matrix that shows you how the harvest rate or the ESA impact rate varies based on run size. And this is just showing it at the 82,000 total upriver run. The third column from the right is the non-Indian harvest rate, 1.6 up to 2.7%. Prior to this, we were at a 2% every year limit. Historical Spring Chinook fisheries. Prior to 1977, we did not have fisheries targeting. Wait a minute.
We did.
Yes. Prior to 1977, we had fisheries targeting upriver Spring Chinook. Beginning in 78 and forward, we didn't. We, under USV Oregon, we said these fish need protection, and we avoided fishing on them, both us and the treaty tribes. So we avoided them from 78 to 2000. Commercial fisheries ended March 10th. Sport fisheries ended March 31. And all of our fisheries occurred below the mouth of the Willamette River, where there was lower river stocks of Spring Chinook to harvest and target. In 1990s, we had the ESA listing. The USV Oregon Agreement addressed the ESA issues. We had some really small run sizes. I think the lowest was around 10,000, little or no fishing in the mid-90s. And then in 2001, we had a new agreement with the treaty tribes and our other USV Oregon partners. We had most of the Spring Chinook in the basin mass marked, and we had a very large upriver forecast that year. So we were, beginning in 2001, we were able to expand all of our historical fisheries in time and in area. So we expanded those in time by fishing in April, May, and June, and we expanded them in area by fishing above the Willamette River, upstream of Bonneville Dam, and into the Snake River. So the expanded opportunity means sharing the fish through a greater number of fisheries. This slide is how we've done in the last 3 years on the upriver ESA impact allocation. And the blue bars shows what the policies have said the sport allocation should be for that particular run size. And these are based on post-season final run sizes. So that's the sport allocation. You can see kind of ranged from a little over 1% to almost 1.2% of the allowable, which was whatever it was, 1.9 to 2.4 or something. And then the red bars show what the actual fishery, what actually happened. And in 09 and 10, you know, the sport fishery nearly used all of their allocation, and 11, it was short. And the next one is for the commercial fishery, and their allowed allocation was around 0.7 to just a little over 1%, and the red shows how they fared in their allocation. So both getting less than the ESA allocation. And some of that is due to the catch balance provision being more restrictive. You can see a pretty big change in this graph over time. Remember in 1977, which is when this graph starts, we weren't fishing on upriver spring Chinook at all. So 77 and or 78 through 2000, those were fisheries that ended March 31st, focused on lower river stocks. And you can see what happened when we were able to expand fisheries and have marked selective fisheries in the 2000s. The average catch 2001 to 2011, 17,000. The highest was in 2010 with 29,000 caught. Angler trips averaged 139,000, and in 2002 was the highest with 175,000. The next slide is, oh, I'm missing one. So the current fisheries open January through March are still our permanent rule below the I-5 bridge. We then work with our advisors. We walk through that preseason plan that I talked about earlier, work with our advisors, develop plan, what's the run size, what's the allowable, what's the commission's allocation, figure all that out, how many fish are there to catch, and then plan our fisheries. In recent years, we've had an end date around early to mid-April. We do the in-season management and try to make extend fishery if possible. The run size update is not coming till mid-May. And this year, I think it was a little bit later than that when we were able to update the fishery. We have had some fisheries in late May into early June in recent years. Commercial fishery, a change as well in the catch over time when we had some opportunities prior to the 1978 time frame. The average catch from 01 to 11 is 6,600, and the highest was in 2002 with 14,500. Our commercial fisheries are highly regulated. They have requirements to use tangle nets, which are small mesh gill nets that tangle the fish instead of gilling the fish. They use what we call recovery boxes that help revive the fish that have to be released. They have to take training in order to be able to fish in the fishery. The recovery box has to have two chambers or two boxes. There's specific size and flow regulations. Has to pump 16 to 20 gallons per minute. They're using shorter nets, short soak times. They have to have red corks on their buoys, lighted buoys. And then we do onboard monitoring to get numbers of fish released. And this slide is of two fish in the recovery boxes, and I just wanted to show you what they look like in the recovery box. And the fish on the right, you can see it's laying on his side, so he needs to be recovered. That's not the position that he wants to be in. So that's him recovering.
After another hour of this, you'll probably all need a
Okay, next slide. Okay, I'm going to talk about select area fisheries now. Select area fisheries, we call them safe. This map has all the select areas on it. There's only one in Washington. It's in Deep River. There's the other three are in Oregon. Young's Bay is the largest, Tongue Point and Blind Slough. So that's kind of the big map of those. The commercial harvest over time, this is 1993 to 2011, and the I have all four areas on here. So you can see the largest harvest was in 2010 at about 25,000, and prior to that, the average was probably about, I don't know, 6,000 or 7,000. The blue bar is Young's Bay. It's the biggest area and has the most participation and the biggest catch. And then the next one in line is Blind Slough, the red ones. Deep River doesn't show up very well on this at all. It's the top of the bar, and that's the green one, but it's just not a very big fishery. The next slide.
Commissioner Jennings.
If you could back up just as a... So I'm just looking at the explanation of 2009-2011 average ex-vessel value. Is that saying that per commercial fishing boat, the average value, is that an annual per year?
Oh, I'm sorry. I probably didn't explain that earlier. It is the average... It's the pounds of fish landed times the price paid for the entire fishery, and then averaged over 3 years. So it's
so that's
it's
an
entire,
annual an annual average. I mean, so $731,000 per year
over those 3 years. Okay. Yes,
for the entire fleet.
For the entire fleet.
Yes, in all four areas.
Commissioner Perry, have a question?
Yeah, I just wondered why the fishery in the safe area in Washington is so small.
Well, it's because Deep River is small. It's a river. It has some wide areas in it, but it's just not a very big area geographically.
When we initially chose areas for select areas, there were some pretty specific geographic criteria. Because we really wanted areas that had low dip-in of the main stem fish swimming by and yet would be very conducive for fish culture themselves without nearby natural spawning areas that might be impacted. And just due to geography, there were several areas on the Oregon side that fit those criteria well. Really only two on the Washington side. The other one upriver almost to Longview. That one never panned out at all. Deep River has sort of worked out. But really, even on the Oregon side, one dominates, and that's Young's Bay.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But I was going to wait, but now we're asking questions, so I'll get on a roll here for a minute. But item one, slide 157. Just an explanation. If I look over at line 4, the Treaty Indian Catch Guideline, and then line 6, non-Indian mortality guideline. So I'm assuming that the treaty Indian catch guideline is the actual fish that are sold and there's tickets for, right? And I'll just continue. And secondly, the non-Indian mortality guideline is an all mortalities tool. So in the tribal fishery, we're not accounting for net dropout or sea lion predation in the gillnet fishery or any other mortality? Is that what we're doing?
That is true. I'm glad you brought this slide up because it kind of goes back to something we talked about earlier. This shows you the catch balancing restrictions. And when I talked about we couldn't harvest all of the available fish, this basically shows that whatever the treaty allowance is of fish in the fourth column over, that is our allowance. If we could catch more fish if we weren't bound by that. So that's one thing. So the treaty catch is the way I explained it earlier. It's based on flying the river, counting the nets, and estimating the catch. Or with spring chinook, a big part of their fishing, the first part of their fishing is from ceremonial permits where they send just a few guys out there to catch fish specifically for ceremonies. And there's numbers associated with that. They go back to the tribe to use for that purpose. So that's part of their fish. And then the rest is from the estimated catch in the other areas. The non-Indian mortality guideline is fish that the non-Indians keep and take home, and the fish that they release and are counted as mortalities because some of them die, because our fisheries are marked selective. So that's why it says mortality, because it's kept fish plus release mortalities.
It would seem more biologically sound to me if we did manage both fisheries on a total mortality.
We make the assumption we are treating both fisheries as total mortality because we don't count sea lion mortality in any of our fisheries, sport, commercial, tribal, and we don't have an estimate of net dropout in any of our fisheries or, you know, fish that don't, you know. So we don't, that's just an unknown. It's not included in the run size. It's not included in harvest estimates.
Is there a hooking mortality percentage that's used in the Columbia River recreational fishery?
Yes.
And no net dropout?
No.
And to fill in a detail there, who sets the mortality, the incidental mortality from release?
The rate? Mm-hmm. Well, the current rate that we're using for spring chinook has been in place for several decades. Was reviewed originally by the Technical Advisory Committee under USV Oregon. It's been reviewed since then by the same committee and recommended that it stay at that rate. So I guess I would say the Technical Advisory Committee under USV Oregon makes recommendations to the USV Oregon policy group on those types of things. And the tangle net mortality rate in the commercial fishery was developed through some research that WDFW was doing. The Technical Advisory Committee reviewed the research and made a recommendation to the USV Oregon Policy Group and ultimately the Columbia River Compact of what rate they thought was appropriate to use. And we have reviewed other mortality. I mean, that would be the process.
Mr. Schmitten?
I'm back on slide 168. Is there reciprocity for Washington bill netters to have Oregon permits vice versa?
We have reciprocity in the Columbia River, and Oregon has recently said that Young's Bay fits that category as well. And then in the other select areas, there's state waters and concurrent waters both. I'm going to show you maybe some maps of the select areas again, but there's both in Oregon. So the outer areas are joint jurisdiction waters, joint waters, and then when you get up inland, you know, then it's state-only water. So there's both in those other areas.
So I just add to that reciprocity in Young's Bay is a very recent development, as Cindy said, and it's an Oregon decision. It's not a decision that Washington can make as well. So Oregon can make it affirmatively. Oregon can also choose to no longer grant it.
So the next slide is sport harvest in select areas, and this is, note, it's a different scale. The highest catch in 2010 of 1,200 fish. It's not a real popular fishery, but there's some that does occur. Next slide. I was going to talk about our tributary fisheries in the Cowlitz Klamaluis downstream of Bonneville Dam, and those are where the fisheries and the hatcheries are located. The next slide shows the harvest over time from 1980, and the red line is the production, the smolt. Actually, I found out it's not just smolt releases. In the 80s and 90s, it includes some fingerling and fry releases as well. So that's a harvest in those tributaries. And then I'm moving above Bonneville Dam, spring Chinook harvest in, I think, the treaty fishery. And so there's our spring Chinook in their fishery. The first 8,000 to 10,000 of their spring Chinook are those that they use for ceremonial purposes. The next slide shows the sport harvest in the main stem, spring Chinook, from Bonneville to McNary. And this is, you know, a smaller fishery as well, ranging from 1,500 to just under 3,500. And then Bonneville Pool tributaries, we have some very popular sport fisheries in the Bonneville Pool, in the Wind River, Drano Lake, and the Klickitat River. All have spring Chinook in them. These are the harvests, 16,000 in the earlier years, and recently 12,000, 6,000, and then the red line is smolt releases in those tributaries. And now we're moving into the Snake River.
My favorite area with a vested interest. We go back just to the map there real quick, Bill. Just kind of as an overview, you'll see here that not only does the snake fisheries also involve, obviously, Washington, but also Idaho and Oregon, and also coordination with primarily the Nez Perce and the Umatilla tribes, with some Shoshone-Bannock involvement as well. So pretty involved area there. The fisheries associated with the Snake River for spring Chinook are in that overall allocation that Cindy talked about earlier for the main stem Columbia. So, for example, in the overall 2% that would be allowed, or approximately, say, 2%, in the last 10 years or so, the snake has gotten, of that, say, example 2%, anywhere from 0.2 to 0.3 of the 2%. So that's how we're involved in that allocation. So several small zones. We started working in 2001, as you saw, where fisheries started to come in with some of the new agreements. We opened up some very small fisheries, primarily around the little goose area to begin with, which is just upstream from where the Toucannon River comes in. And we've annually been able to open these fisheries and expand them to some extent by emergency rule. So again, ESA allocations, they're linked. There's been an exceedingly increasing interest as we've gone through this last 10-year period where, as others have mentioned, anglers are really starting to kind of figure out how to fish for these fish and are really starting to generate some interest. And so where on the east side, we kind of joke a little bit about where we're starting to have east side meetings associated with the north of Falcon process. We call them northeast of McNary, and we kind of include a lot of different fisheries in those. And we've had good public participation at these meetings over the last several years. Director Anderson has come over and participated in those and been very, very well received. Some of the issues as far as high angler interest is high angler frustration with the low harvest ability to have a limited allocation for the snake, also associated with ESA. The short and unpredictable seasons have kind of dealt with looking at the run updates when those fish actually show up into the snake, and being aware that there is an overall allocation limit. And as we're tied with the Columbia, if there's some allocations that are a little bit over in the lower part of the river, we have to adjust how we operate those fisheries in the snake to be able to make sure that we're in our overall allowable impact limit. So in some cases, particularly in the mid-2000s, we've closed early because of some of the allocation issues, and that's created some frustration with the anglers.
John, can I add something? John was referring to these east of McNary meetings, and I've been in communication with a lot of the constituents over there, and they're very interested in the allocation, and I think you'll be hearing from them, if you haven't already, about needing more allocation for that side. So I told them, I've in my responses, I've explained that the policy goes through 2013. We'd be, and that we, the staff, would be willing to come over, meet with them as we do our, develop the new policy.
Director Anderson?
We did just receive letters from both the Walla Walla, the city of Walla Walla, as well as the county on this allocation matter. I just sent a response back to them this week, indicating a willingness to come over, as Cindy indicated, and discuss the issue with them.
Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. John, I think your phrase of frustrated was very mild compared to what their feelings really are about the allocation and opportunities. But could you say anything? I think there's some potential there we're not taking advantage of, an opportunity for us to get more fishermen and participation over there, if a great growth opportunity for us. Do you agree with that, or?
Well, one of the things that we've looked at, the fish that are basically destined for the snake are, wild stocks, obviously, within the Idaho, primarily in Oregon areas, and to Washington to some extent. They're also produced, the hatchery fish that we target are produced under the Lower Snake River Compensation Program. The Lower Snake Program has looked at what their return rates are and what fisheries are being offered through opportunities for spring chinook. And they're looking at trying to work with partners, basically all the co-managers, to try to develop some additional fishing opportunities. So we're working in the Walla Walla Basin, for example, where we think we might be able to develop some fisheries there on non-listed stocks of Carson stock with the Umatilla tribe in coordination. So there are some opportunities that we're trying to look at to try to address more areas and more avenues for fishing.
I know I get, at this time of year, the last month or so, probably three or four questions, and they know the exact dam count everywhere up there, and they're calling me to find out if we're going to have a season open or what's going on, because their boat's hooked up to their truck. They just don't know whether they should drive for 2 hours before the season closes.
Right. So there's a couple of other slides here. We'll talk a little bit about that. But there's an issue of folks in the upper lower snake, for example, around the Clarkston area that are interested in fishing. They think it's a little too far for them to go down to Ice Harbor and Lower Granite and Little Goose. So there's an issue with allocation, essentially, and harvest opportunity within the snake itself that I'm hearing from several anglers. So.
Thank you.
Basically, the map that was up there earlier is just showing the four areas. Basically, area B was in the Little Goose area, where we've had kind of a initial start for our fisheries. Area C down in Ice Harbor, we were able to open up within the last couple of years, A. And then C is below Lower Granite, and D is up around the Clarkston area. So part of it is the runs that have come in over the last several years, and also the ability for the department to open up these fisheries because of the Columbia River Salmon and Steel endorsement fee, where we've gotten funds to be able to open up areas because we had the funding and the staff subsequently to monitor those fisheries. So just kind of an overview for you folks. Angler effort and catch rates have increased dramatically. The last 2 years, we've had significant increases where we've opened up actually these four areas for fishing, and the anglers are really starting to be able to target those areas, particularly below Ice Harbor and below Little Goose. That's where the majority of our harvest has come. The fish have come through. The anglers have really hit them well and basically used up our allocation for the snake prior to those fish being able to get up upriver into the Clarkston area, and so that's caused a fair amount of consternation for those folks in the Clarkston area. We talked about that at our North of Falcon process and asked anglers what sort of opportunities they wanted, and they wanted to have a 7 days a week open and have the opportunity to take two adults per day. So that basically contributed to some of that early fast harvest. So angler trips the last couple of years have been very good. The economic value of these fisheries is also quite good, and this is basically looking at an expansion with approximately $1,000 per angler day, and then the expansion factor of 1.9 for all other economic values to the local communities and economies. And so this is kind of giving you a range of how important that fishery has been.
Where's that picture taken?
Is
that what area?
This is below Little Goose. So you can see here, this graph kind of goes from 2001, when we were able to start fisheries, up through last year, and it mirrors essentially the graph that Cindy had put in earlier that kind of shows the overall harvest below Bonneville, where we had some good harvest opportunities early. It sagged, particularly in the mid-2000s, and then the last couple years has really picked up with I think last year we were within about 94% of our allowed allocation, and this year we did quite well. So Snake River Fisheries, one of the things that we talked about and the director mentioned also in looking at into 2013 is changes to consider. When I say reduce the harvest rate, that will look at saying, can we open up an alternate days or maybe a couple of days a week? Maybe we can reduce the daily bag limit to extend the fishery. So those are things that we're going to take a look at and discuss with the constituents this next year. Potentially hope to extend the length of the fishery after the fish arrive in the area. One of the things that we've had some difficulties, as Cindy mentioned earlier, was just in looking at the run timing. We're planning and we open these fisheries in April and the fish don't arrive until mid-May, and then by the time they do get there, they really come in, and it's been difficult to try to manage for that. So we want to try to look at other areas to be able to extend the fishery and in the areas of the fisheries, even up into this Clarkston area we talked about. So allow more opportunity in those upper two zones. The east side public participation involved in setting the allocation levels, that's something that Cindy and the director also talked about. There's a lot of interest in the snake, be able to have more participation in that process and be involved in that dialogue.
Okay, the next piece here is Hanford Reach, Spring Chinook Fisheries, and I'm showing the two areas here below Priest Rapids. We've got the Wanapum tribe ceremony and subsistence fishery, which is, they're a non-treaty tribe. They are they don't actually have a real tribal government, and so their fishery is actually part of the non-treaty allocation. The other little area that we had a fishery was at Ringgold, which is adjacent to our Ringgold Springs rearing facility. Go ahead to the next slide, Bill. This shows the harvest in the Ringgold area bank fishery. It was a bubble fishery right out in front of Ringgold rearing facility. It was a good fishery up until, well, it was supported by Mitchell Act production at Ringgold up through 2000, and then the Mitchell Act funding was terminated, and you see it kind of dropped off. We got some intermittent production. The Umatilla tribe funded production for a couple years, 2003 and 2004 brood years. They did that to get some adults back for their reintroduction program in the South Fork Walla Walla. And then we produced the fish for them with their funding, and we sort of sharecropped. They took basically half the fish to the Walla Walla. The remaining fish were allowed to be caught by our bank anglers at Ringgold. And then the commission provided, or the department provided funding for 1 year in 2006, brood year 2006. And so the you see the fishery at Ringgold kind of tailed. Well, we had some fishing in 2009 and then in 2010, and that 2010 harvest of about 500 fish. That was off that last brood year, the four-year-olds. Last year, we had a few days of fishing for the last age group, age fives,
and now they've blinked out. Go ahead to the next slide. There you go. It's bank fishing only. Again, it was, go back. There you go. Half a million to a million smolts per year until the Mitchell Act funding went away. And we basically had our last fishery a year ago, and the permanent rule was rescinded in 2012. And so that fishery's gone now. excuse me. The Wanapum Tribal fishery, it's managed by us. We have RCWs and WACs that authorize us to issue fishing permits. The permits are issued out of Region 3 by myself and the regional director. We have an allocation through the ESA allocation that we get from Cindy that we use to base the total catch, total harvest. It's a gillnet fishery. In fact, it's going this week. We opened it this. Generally, the way it works is they get to set nets on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and pull their net on Tuesday through Friday, just weekdays. For the spring chinook fishery, they get a week of fishing, four nights of fishing. I saw the report. They've caught one jack so far. That's it. And they had a total harvest of about 35 fish, of which no more than three can be wild Upper Columbia spring chinook. So that's the Hanford Reach. The next section here is the Yakima River spring chinook fishery, which is the big fishery in Region 3. This is a fishery, terminal fishery, that is open right now. We have two sections that are above and below the Yakima Reservation. Excuse me. The Lower River Reach runs from Richland to Prosser Dam. It opened May 16th. The Upper River portion runs from Union Gap to Rosa Dam in the Yakima Canyon. And it opened on the 19th of May this year, which is the latest it's ever opened. Back in the early 2000s, we would open in late April. Back, Cindy talked about the run timing being having shifted. We would open in mid to late April, and they'd be catching fish in the Yakima River in April. Now we don't even see fish in the Yakima River until, you know, second week in May. Same thing happened last year. We didn't open until mid-May. The middle section is what we call the Yakima Nation Reservation Boundary Reach. It's actually the most productive area for sport fishing in the Yakima. It has the best holding water. But the reservation runs from Mabton to Union Gap, and the eastern boundary of the reservation is the Yakima River from Mabton to Union Gap. And under the Treaty of 1855, Article 3, they have exclusive fishing rights within the reservation and all the waters on the boundary. And therefore, we cannot unilaterally open the fishery. We have an Attorney General's opinion that dating back to the early 60s that says that the Department of Fisheries was in error when we went ahead and opened that for non-treaty sport fishing without first getting concurrence from the Yakima Nation. We did that without knowing about that ruling. It was from 64. We opened it in 2001, 2002, and 2004, and then the tribal attorney called us on it and said, they found the AGO's opinion from 64 and said, have you ever seen this? You don't have authority to open the fishery along the reservation boundary. So since then, we've asked annually for their concurrence to essentially waive their exclusive treaty fishing rights. Director Anderson has intervened to help us secure that fishery. We did not open after 204 until last year. All it doesn't take very much of a dispute with the tribe on something else like tribal hunting or anything else can cause the tribal council to be disinclined to approve a non-treaty sport fishery. But the last year they approved it for the first time, and I got word yesterday that they approved it, and we are in the process right now of cutting an emergency rule that will open the boundary reach tomorrow for non-tribal sport fishing. So we're going to have all three areas open.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have a sense of what the economic value of that recreational fishery in that Yakima piece?
I don't have that here. We can get that for you. It's a really popular area. I've been getting lots of calls. I mean, people are fishing lower river and upper river, but the boat fishery is best in that middle section, and we have three access sites, good access sites, and all the drift boat guys want to fish that area, and it's very productive when it's open.
Some bank fishing as well.
Bank fishing as well. It's a great area. This is a Mark Slifton fishery. We target Yakima Klickitat Fisheries Project spring chinook that are produced by the Yakima Nation at the Clay Elum Hatchery. Like I said, we open two areas above and below the reservation every year. And then because of the treaty secure fishing rights, we have to ask for permission. And like I said, we opened in 01, 02, and 04 without their permission, and then open last year and then this year. It'll open tomorrow and run through the end of June. One thing about this fishery, we're not ESA constrained at all. The Yakima Spring Chinook run is really healthy. We target hatchery fish because wild fish are used for broodstock at Clay Elum Hatchery 100%, and we're trying to maintain PNI, or limit the proportion of hatchery fish on the spawning grounds above Rosa Dam. So we target the hatchery fish in the sport fishery. The tribal fishery is non-selective. They keep wild and hatchery, and they also harvest Natchez and American River fish that are all wild. You can see the harvest rates. We had a really great run in 2000, and they caught a couple thousand fish, 2001. And last year we came close to that again with about 1,800 fish in that fishery. And most of those were caught in that upper river section because the boundary reach opened really late, and our river conditions were bad. The Yakima is really subject to their success rate. It really depends on snowpack and runoff, and last year we had pretty good runoff. It came off slow and even, and we didn't get blown out with high flood water, muddy water for 2 or 3 weeks, which can really shut the fishery down. It came off even, and so they were productive for most of the season. Go ahead. And now we're on to Jeff.
I have a question.
Question?
Commissioner Mencken?
Yeah, do we have data on the tribal harvest?
We do. We have that, and I can provide that.
What? Can you just tell me what it
is?
Never mind.
I'll have to go back. I can get that for you. We'll get it.
I'd like to see that, just out of curiosity.
Yep. It's all dip net fishery, or hook and line. No gill nets.
Okay, now we're up in the Wenatchee Basin. Ignore that spelling of the Icicle River there. That must be some local colloquialism or something. So the Icicle is the, go back, Bill. The Icicle, within that box, the tributary to the right is the Wenatchee River proper, and the Icicle is the lower part. The fishery I'm going to be talking about might be the smallest spring Chinook fishery yet. That little curve that comes right off from the Wenatchee, the lower curve, it's, the fishery is actually only in about half of that curve. So it's a very small fishery. So the numbers that I'm going to give you are, makes them even more surprising. This is the only spring, currently the only spring Chinook fishery that we have in the Upper Columbia above Priest Rapids. The reason is that everything up there has been ESA listed endangered, all the endemic populations. This fishery is on a Carson stock, propagated by Leavenworth National Fish Hatchery. They stock about 1.2 million smolts a year. The it's a marked selective fishery, so even if there are some strays of endemic Wenatchee fish moving into the icicle, we're not fishing on those. So we're able to fish just in the icicle and just up to the hatchery. It's primarily a boat fishery. There's not much bank fishery available there. Limited number of holes. So you really have to be careful how we manage it, what the limit's going to be, the timing of it, just so that you can run as many trips through there as possible. So you can see from this slide, this season is generally May through July. Effort varies widely, 1,000 to 9,000 angler trips. At that 9,000 angler trip, using that $58 per trip mark, this fishery is worth close to $500,000 in local economic activity. The harvest, again, like the trips, can be very low. Some years it was only 100 fish. Last year we really blew it out, 3,600 fish. This year's looking very similar. We're going to have about 7,000 fish returning. Fishery actually already opened up. And I'm anticipating a similar type fishery than we had in 2011. That's the only thing we have going currently. Let's see the next slide. As I said, all the endemic stocks, all the native fish, all the native spring Chinook up there have been listed as endangered. There's hatchery programs for supplementation and recovery purposes conducted under permits, but no fisheries have been permitted. No fisheries were included in those permits. The production, so everything except for the Leavenworth 1.2 million that you see down below, those are all mitigation fish from the PUDs. So they total close to about 2 million. Go ahead. But I think what's most exciting about spring Chinook in the Upper Columbia is the future, and I'm talking the very near future. We've been for the last 3 years negotiating brand new permits for not only the hatchery programs, but including fisheries with NOAA. Well, first with the coal managers and the Fish and Wildlife Service. And now we're actually writing the permits. I anticipated getting the permits for a fishery in the Wenatchee in this year, although we don't have them in hand yet. It'd be nice to have them because the fish are arriving as we speak, and probably either later this year or next year on the Methow. The way our talk was structured originally, we were going to do the fall fisheries, and I was going to talk about steelhead first, because it's the same situation for the spring Chinook and these new permits, and that is that the fisheries are being permitted as a not as a recreational opportunity. They're permitted as a tool for managing hatchery arrivals on the spawning ground, so managing for PHAS. Where there's no, we're talking about all these other fisheries. We talked about allocations for the whole river. These are in the tributaries. There's no allocation for the take. The take is confined to the tributaries, and it'll be monitored under the creel surveys and the catch and release mortalities within each tributary. We're at least initially, we're going to be using the same catch and release mortality of 10% for to estimate our take. But it's really all about numbers of NORs and numbers of natural origin fish arriving on the spawning grounds any given year, and being able to determine how many of these hatchery fish we need to fill out our escapement. We never get enough natural origin fish to make escapements, so we do need some of these hatchery fish. But for instance, this year on the Wenatchee, we're going to have about a 3,500 hatchery fish return for the upper Wenatchee, and we're only going to need about 1,000 of those fish to make escapement. And so there's actually 2,500 fish on the table We would like to do adult management this year. We've overescaped the Wenatchee probably the last 10 years. And we're working on possibly pulling something off this year, but we've got a lot of people to have to agree that what the permits will look like when we do get them in our hands or what we'll abide by this year, and we'll see how that goes. Still a few issues that need to be resolved, primarily around marking of these hatchery programs. Most of the hatchery programs are made up of two components, one a conservation program, and those are all wild by wild fish. Those are the ones that we tend to use some portion of on the spawning grounds. And then there's also a safety net component that's either hatchery by wild or for most spring Chinook safety net programs are hatchery by hatchery. So they're the fail-safe piece. If all else fails and you've got to use some fish on the spawning grounds, are the last ones you'd want to use. But those will, in the end, be marked, and those will make available spring Chinook fisheries of varying lengths and degrees, depending on the run size in the future. The nice thing about the Wenatchee, though, is that with you saw how small that fishery for those icicle fish, so we're going to have 7,000 fish coming back. If we do really well like we did last year, we might harvest half of them. The other half are taken out at the hatchery and are allocated to food banks and the tribes. If we can open up, we have a permit to actually operate fishery on the endemic portion of that run, we can also be fishing on those icicle fish all the way up. So, something I'm very excited about, I know that the constituents up there are too. Questions?
Just a follow-up response to Commissioner Duvia. Commissioner, one of the other options that we have potentially this year for additional opportunity for spring Chinook, spring-summer Chinook in the Snake River system would be we're coordinating a fishery that we propose to NOAA fish for the Grand Ronde River. So we've got our fish management evaluation plan in, jointly submitted with Oregon, and we're looking at if we can have that fishery. We're taking a look at what's going on as far as fish coming up that are bound for Oregon, so we'll be looking at what the Bonneville counts are for pit tag returns, etc. Should note in the next week we're going to be able to open up a fishery. If we do, we'll share the harvest allocation between Oregon and Washington. We're about a 6-mile stretch in Washington where we could probably have a really nice fishery beginning probably early July after the sensitive stocks have gone through the system. So we're really hopeful that that'll come across.
This is our spring Chinook summary slide for like we did for summer Chinook. So an average 2009 to 2011, our ESA objective averaged our actual rate average 1.7%, and then the average for that time frame was 2%. All years were less than the limit. I showed you that slide earlier. Total sport harvest averaged 37,000, and then main stem including snake and ringgold was 22.8. 84% of that was below Bonneville. Tributaries averaged 14,000. Total commercial harvest of 19,300, and then you can see the main stem and the safe numbers under that.
Director Anderson?
One of the things that we've started doing here the last 2 years, and this will be the third, is having a tri-state meeting with Idaho Fish and Game and Oregon Fish and Wildlife. And at our first meeting, Idaho's number one topic that they brought to the table was a concern they had about the number of Idaho hatchery fish that were being taken in both the Columbia as well as the, well, primarily the Columbia main stem, but to some extent the Snake River within Washington. We had a good follow-up discussion on that the following year, which would have been last August. But as we hear from other interests that are concerned or would like to see an allocation shift or change, I'm sure it's obvious to everyone that this is pretty much a zero-sum game, and if you if you need to get some more, if you want to get more fishing opportunity in one area, you got to figure out where you're going to get those impacts. And that's what, with all the, and there's linkages, particularly in the lower river, with all the upper river areas to one degree or another. So, John Whalen, you didn't talk about that piece about particularly the Idaho hatchery reared fish and their interest in seeing more of those fish be made available to their residents, their citizens. Could you speak to that just for a moment?
Certainly. Again, one of the things that we look at for allowable impacts for Washington anglers is that portion of the snake that is currently open is up to the Idaho-Washington border, and our allowable impact is within the level for the whole Columbia system for spring chinook recreational fishing. Idaho looks at that, looks that any additional potential impacts might impact their fisheries, their terminal area fisheries, for example, in the Clearwater or in the Little White Salmon, etc. We've worked with a consortium of all the co-managers within the Snake River Basin over the last couple of years in what's called the Snake River Harvest Forum to try to look at allowable impact rates for spring chinook above the Idaho-Washington border. And that's a very difficult issue because, as the director mentioned, it's a zero-sum game, and people are very set on what they currently have and don't wish to share anything else. So they're pretty hard-lined about that.
We also changed the lower river fisheries some in terms of timing, part of our increase in buffering too, and that also moved the pressure on the lower river fisheries off a couple of the hatcheries that Idaho was most concerned about disproportionate impacts and shifted them on to some of the other hatchery production from elsewhere. And the first year readout from Idaho was that was a successful shift, and they felt that the harvest burden was being shared more proportionally across their full range of hatcheries. They were very concerned. They were just simply losing access to a couple of the hatcheries. So in addition to the actions that John referred to upriver, we took a couple in the lower river too. It seems to be helping.
Okay.
So Chair Wecker, where do you want to go next? We can go to Steelhead.
Any additional questions on spring chinook? Looks like not. Okay. We wanted to take up Steelhead. Steelhead next. So let's go to slide
136.
117. No. She already knows. 117 is what she said.
Steelhead fisheries?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll start out here with historical steelhead fisheries in the lower river. Winter steelhead harvest prior to the 1970s, we had high impact rates. Sale of steelhead was prohibited in the commercial fishery, 1975. We currently use large mesh nets to avoid those. Sport fishery wild steelhead release was implemented in the late 80s and early 90s. Next slide shows the summer steelhead harvest below Bonneville Dam. It's a popular fishery. Opens May 16th below the I-5 bridge, and it's a very popular summer fishery. Occurs June, July, and August primarily, but is almost, and through the fall, but those are the peak months. You can see last year's, we're still there, last year's very high catch of 25,000 was probably a record catch in that fishery. And then we have steelhead fisheries in the tributaries above and below Bonneville Dam. The blue line on the graph are the tributaries below Bonneville Dam, and the Bonneville to McNary Dam tributaries are in red, and you can see harvest here. Notice the scale on this one, which I just did. We're talking 50 to 80,000 steelhead in the tributaries, and this is just up to McNary Dam. The Snake River is another huge piece, and other areas as well. So moving upstream, keep going. Now, so we have Fall Chinook and Steelhead mixed together a little bit, so you'll have to, okay, great. There's the Treaty Indians harvest a fair number of steelhead in the Columbia River, and actually they matched our tributaries highs in those early or mid-80s years, in the 70 and 80,000. Recently it's been around 30,000. Keep find another steelhead slide. Here we go.
Can we go back to that map? So one of the things you'll pick up here is just the tributary components of the steelhead fishery as we go into the Snake. So next slide. So essentially the steelhead fisheries in Southeast, this is really a significant component of our anadromous fisheries. And it generally occurs in September through March with a peak effort in October. Selective fisheries, this is probably one of the first areas to really go all selective fisheries within the state, which we started in 83. And the numbers that we're going to be talking about here include harvest within the main stem snake, as well as the significant tributaries such as the Grand Ron, the Toucanon, and to some extent with the Walla Walla. The Walla Walla area is essentially in the mid-Columbia, but we include it in Southeast as part of our steelhead management associated with the Lower Snake River Comp program. So really, Snake River fisheries are consistently in the top 10 as far as steelhead fisheries within the state. The Grand Ron is really nationally known, and we have a lot of anglers that will actually come over. The guides will come over from the west side and fish the Grand Ron later in the season, particularly in that November, December time frame. Economic value of these fisheries is at least 14 to 40 million if you really look at direct cost per angler trip in this time frame from 2000 to 2010. So a significant fishery. This slide here really shows the extent.
Commissioner Jennings.
And relative to the wild, what's the stock status of the wild steelhead stock in that area?
Steelhead stocks, we have several steelhead stocks in that area. We've got endemic stocks in the Touche and in the Toucanon systems, which are obviously listed, but we're working on them as far as a recovery plan.
Listed as threatened,
sir, yes. And we have recovery plan goals for those. We're also using an endemic stock to help boost the population with wild genetics, obviously. The main stocks that we use for the fisheries, for the harvest opportunities, are primarily Lion's Ferry stock, which is kind of a conglomerate stock within the basin, and a Wallawa stock, which was an Oregon derivative. It basically is released only in the Grand Ron at our Cottonwood acclimation site, and we get returns of 3%. So it's just a fantastic fishery. Going back to that slide, as far as the annual harvest, Bill, if you could go back to that one, yeah. Part of the growth in these fisheries, as you see in the early 2000s and on up into 2010, we have a lot of fish that are actually used to be harvested in the lower river as part of the Lower Snake Comp program, but as far as some of the mesh sizes that were changed to protect fish down below, a lot of the steelhead have then come through. We're seeing the value of that in the Snake River system, as well as the full compensation program coming online as far as releases. So main stem in 2009, over 25,000 fish harvested, and then the next slide just shows what the harvest was in the significant tributaries. So you can see in one particular year, 2009, we had an approximate total harvest of 40,000 steelhead. So it really shows the value of these steelhead fisheries in Southeast Washington. We can hold off on that one.
Go back. Yeah. Go back one more. No, keep going. No. There was, there was a map. There. That's what I was looking for. That just shows you the Hanford Reach. This is for the salmon fishery, but the only steelhead fishery in Region 3 is in the Hanford Reach, and it's associated with Ringgold. Go ahead. There you go. It's a marked selective fishery. We target Ringgold Springs rearing facility steelhead. They have a double fin clip, adipose and RV clip,
If Region 2 opens Steelhead above Priest's Rapids Dam, then in our fishing area, we allow any hatchery steelhead to be retained in addition to the ringgold fish. It's the only piece of the Mitchell Act funding that we retained. Mentioned that we lost the spring Chinook funding back in 2000. We have a Mitchell Act funded program at Ringgold, 180,000 smolts per year. The brood actually come from Wells. They're Wells hatchery steelhead. We get fry shipped to Ringgold, and they're reared there and released to provide this fishery in the Hanford Reach. And it's basically the main area is the lower half of the Hanford Reach from Pasco to the wooden power line towers, which is kind of opposite the old Hanford town site. And we have opened above the power line towers to Priest Rapids up near Vernita Bridge at least once, if not twice, in recent years. It depends on the strength of the upriver run and if we have sufficient ESA impacts. We don't want to burn through a lot of ESA impacts in a way that would prematurely affect the fishery in the Medhow or the Wenatchee, other areas. But when we have sufficient impacts, we've allowed fishing in the upper half of the Hanford Reach. And this fishery opens in October, but has recently opened in September because Region 2 has been able to open earlier. And it runs all the way through March, so it's a good six-month season. Most of the efforts and most of the catches in October and November. And then we have a little two-week extension in April, bank fishing only in that same area where the old Ringgold spring Chinook bank fishery took place to basically clean up the residual fish that are coming back to the hatchery. Go ahead. And that's that fishery there at Ringgold. And you can see since in the last 10 years or so, they're catching about 1,500 to 2,000 fish. But 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they had a really good return. They got 3,000. So it's a very popular fishery. You can see quite a bit of effort. 30, somewhere in the range of 30,000 angler hours over the course of the season.
Okay. Upper Columbia, we have potential steelhead fisheries. We have Main Stem, and then Wenatchee, Medhow, and Okanagan tributaries. That first line there, I misstated that. They're actually listed as endangered first in the late 90s, later downgraded to threatened. Unlike the spring Chinook permits that I talked about, the permits that allowed for the hatchery programs, for recovery programs, also included fishery programs. The agency and NOAA Fisheries both recognized that with the strength of the hatchery programs, there was going to have to be some control of hatchery fish. And fisheries, while the permits actually allow for adult management, say at a dam or at the hatcheries, they recognized that a fishery was going to be by far the most important piece of that in terms of getting public acceptance. So, sorry about that. How are we now? These are all marked selective fisheries, complete with gear restrictions. In most cases, no bait is allowed. Main stem, we do allow bait. Seasons are variable. Everything depends on the actual natural origin run size to each tributary. So we have to do a mini forecast once the fish start getting above Priest Rapids. We can open a main stem fishery if we get a certain number above Priest Rapids, but we also have to have a certain number allocated or forecast to each of the tributaries before we can open fisheries in those tributaries. So the Wenatchee, I believe, is 600 natural origin fish. The Methow is 500. The Okanagan is 200, I think, something like that. So we've got to monitor these things very closely. One of the more exciting things that's happening in our ability to refine those forecasts is we've got just about the entire upper river wired now for pit tags at the mouths and at various structures all the way up. So we know, you know, it's becoming much less of a guessing game when we can open up a fishery. And by the way, there's been a lot of that stuff that was put in by the PUDs as part of their mitigation, but we're upgrading everything, and that's what some of that salmon and steelhead endorsement money was used for, that because it's going to enhance our ability to pull off these fisheries on a regular basis. Effort has been anywhere from 3,000 to 29,000 angler trips per season. Again, it depends how many of the tributaries are opened up and what the runs look like. So an average of about 11,600 trips. Harvest also quite variable. But what I really wanted to point out was, given what I told you about the reason for the fisheries being permitted, when we first opened up these fisheries, it's always been anathema to make people harvest a fish if they didn't want to. And so particularly the tributary fisheries in the Upper Columbia sort of became catch and release fisheries. Most of the harvest was going on in the main stem, and I'll show you some graphs about that. So up through the 2008-2009 season, we only averaged about 3,000 fish a season. We were not being very effective in terms of what the permits really had us out there doing. In the 2009-2010 season, we started a mandatory retention of hatchery origin fish. It's a very difficult thing to enforce, but like most things, the anglers, 90% of them are going to do what you tell them to do, and we had pretty good compliance. And so after that, the 2009-10 season through the 2010-11 season, we jumped up to over 13,000 fish harvested. We really started to do some effective hatchery management for the spawning grounds. This shows the production. Again, Priest Rapids shouldn't be on there. Most of the steelhead production, in fact, all of the steelhead production is, no, that's not quite right. Most of the steelhead production is PUD mitigation fish, either inundation or dam survival. There is a piece on the Methow. Right now it's just a little over 100,000. Could go up to as much as 200,000 of that Methow total. That's actually done by the Winthrop National Fish Hatchery. And that's all part of that recalculation with the PUDs that we've been working on. So the grand total is about 856,000 steelhead for the whole upper basin. This shows the angler trips. They've really jumped up in the last few years relative to what they were. A lot of that is because these last few years we've been hitting on all cylinders. In other words, all the tributaries have been opened and we've had some pretty strong runs. You'll notice on all these graphs too, I don't have the last season, 2011-12. We're still working on that data, so I wasn't able to include it. Go ahead. Steelhead harvest. We have one that's, I thought we had mainstay. I thought we had all the harvest. I guess not. Okay, that's all right. This is just the harvest in the main stem, and what I wanted to point out here, again, those last two seasons that I have illustrated there, they have jumped up in part because of the number of trips that were going on, but the main stem, if anything's open, it's usually the main stem. When we get to the other graphs, I want you to remember how high all the years from 2002-03 through 2008-09 were for the main stem, because generally if we saw a lot of harvest in these fisheries, it was the main stem fishers that were doing it. So you see how much lower all those initial years were. This is for the Okanagan, Similkameen. Mandatory retention kicked in. Harvested quite a few more fish. In this case, a lot of the Okanagan, unlike the fall Chinook fishery, a lot of the steelhead fishery does actually occur in the Okanagan. Next. Bethow, same story. Oh, and I didn't include one for the Wenatchee. The Wenatchee, we haven't not had the requisite numbers of natural origin fish to open only four of the last 5 years, so I would have had a graph with only four bars on it. The other thing that's different about the Wenatchee is that there was only, we were averaging something like 775 fish per just over 3,000 trips harvested, not a very high harvest. I attribute that to a couple of things. Despite the high numbers of fish that were being released in the Wenatchee, we didn't have any acclimation, and so we had a very, very high stray rate. Starting this year, we have full acclimation of all of the Wenatchee fish, so by 2014, I expect that fishery to really bump up. And the sizes of the hatchery programs have been reduced to a point of being more appropriate for that tributary. So that might hurt the main stem fisheries because that's where most of those strays were caught, although we caught a lot of them even up in the Methow River. So it's an important thing that we got those stray rates down. But that number of trips, that over 3,000 trips, despite the very low catch rates and very low harvest rates in the Wenatchee, tells me there's a lot of interest in the Wenatchee, and that gives me confidence that we're going to be able to do what we're supposed to do in the Wenatchee in terms of helping remove those hatchery fish that are, in most years, unnecessary.
I've got one more point. I just want to mention that there are no slides there about Yakima steelhead, and that's because we don't have steelhead fisheries in the Yakima. We have no hatchery production in the steelhead production in the Yakima. They're all wild fish. They're listed as threatened. And so everything going on with steelhead is geared to recovery, and we're making some real strides on recovering the wild steelhead population. It's essentially a sanctuary population. And in the Mid-Columbia DPS, it's the Yakima Major Population Group is one of the top performers for recovery in recent years. So we're doing really well recovering that population. We've got a record number of wild steelhead above Rosa Dam in the upper Yakima this year. Doesn't sound like a lot, 400 wild steelhead, but not that long ago it was like 50 or less. So that's it for steelhead, I think.
I have one.
Okay, we're shuffling things around a bit, but it looks... Oh, Director Anderson.
I have one question before we go to the next. I got a feeling this isn't the right time to ask the question, but it seems how Jeff's here, I've got to ask. We have the issue about the Miller Hole fishery and the concerns about not allowing some of those fish to go on up to Methow. Could you just briefly touch on that issue, because it is one that we hear about periodically, and we don't get a chance to have you here very often. And
we'll probably continue to hear about it too.
I'm confident.
We have a few constituents, one of which won't go away, I'm sure. The Miller Hole is in the lower part of the Methow River, and it's an excellent opportunity for bank fishing there. There's both, all in fact, for all the tributaries, there's quite a bit of boat fishing and bank fishing opportunity. But this particular spot provides, it's not only a fairly large spot, but there's a couple of riffles in there, and it's just a very good fishing spot. And so we have the opportunity right from the get-go to take out a lot of hatchery fish before they ever have a chance to get past the rest of us on the spawning grounds. There's constituents on the Methow that are very concerned that they're not going to get there won't be enough fish coming past their favorite fishing hole. But it's, in my mind at least, it's played out that, and it hasn't really changed how many fish, it's changed where and when we've taken out certain cohorts of the hatchery fish, and where we've touched a lot of natural origin fish. So those anglers that are still somewhat disgruntled about having to harvest a hatchery fish, if they want less of a chance of getting a hatchery fish, they have the opportunity to fish further up the Methow River. Fishery extends all the way to Winthrop, and they'll catch and release more fish before they actually have to retain. And I never mentioned our limit. We have a limit of 3 hatchery fish to give everybody the best opportunity to take out as many hatchery fish as we can before they get past Winthrop and onto the spawning grounds. So it sort of has divided the types of fishers, you might say. Those that want to stay out there longer fish higher up. Those that want to harvest fish that are more like the main stem guys, they can fish down in the lower part. I would add that it's not just the Miller Hole. Miller Hole is probably the most visible, and that's why we have some complaints about operating that way. But I think from a management point of view, we haven't seen a decline in the number of trips. We've seen, as you saw by the graphs, a large increase in the number of fish harvested, which is what we're primarily out there to do. So I don't think the issue is going to go away. I have reams and reams of defense papers prepared if you want to get more into it and read those things.
Thanks, Jeff.
Defense. Commissioner Perry?
I keep hearing rumors of bull salmon and steelhead in Lower Crab Creek. Is that producing fish for the main stem?
There's no fish stocked, and there's not any significant production, at least of steelhead. For most of my career, I was actually a district biologist and applied the rivers and grounds down there, and I'd always heard about all these steelhead, but we could never pin them down. At the time of year they come in, it's very difficult to observe things in Crab Creek. And so we got a project going through BPA funding to actually put a weir in there and see what came in. And we never found a steelhead. On the other hand, we have known, and they're very visible, we do have fall Chinook coming in. And they apparently do reproduce to the extent that there's a self-perpetuating production. They are a little bit different. We did the genetics on them. It's an interesting little run. We just combined it at this point with the fall Chinook in the main stem, where you can still fish for them, but we don't. We closed the whole area to fishing this last year to fishing for fall Chinook in the Crab Creek, just because they're so accessible. I mean, and we can't patrol it. It's a lot of areas are remote, as you well know. And we were afraid that, given the semi-uniqueness of this potential new run, I guess, we didn't want it just snagged out of existence. So I think we've got it well enough protected for the time being until we really decide what it is we have here.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's try to get through all these slides in the next half hour. The rest of them, starting at 89 with sockeye and then the fall fishery. Commissioner Jennings?
So are you thinking we're going to be able to done with the entire presentation in the next half hour?
Looks like we could, possibly.
Okay, because if that's not the case, I would suggest we end soon. But if we can actually push through it, I'm willing to try.
I think we, what do you think, Bill?
Well, I think you probably can. I think it might come at a real cost if there are a significant reservoir of questions that have accumulated. It probably will come at a cost of any real back and forth dialogue on what we've presented so far.
Yeah. Well, we do have the option of talking about what Director Anderson suggested that we talk about at the end, which is what more information we need. We can do that right now and set aside sockeye and fall fishery for some other time. Or we can put off that discussion of what more information we need until tomorrow or Saturday. The Fish Committee will be meeting, so the Fish Committee can tackle that question of what more information we need. Prepare some thoughts for the rest of the commission. But is there anything that needs to be discussed right now? Anything burning? Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think one item that's on my mind, and I think it's timely, I think, is I'm hearing a lot of stories and reading articles about Oregon wanting to go to a safe area and eliminating gill netting on the main stem. So I'm curious to see what the Oregon staff is saying to our staff and what your comments would be on that. And if that there's an initiative too proposed, I believe, to do that. And if that were to happen, what kinds of thoughts would you have for what we do in Washington?
Director Anderson?
I would suggest we go through the balance of the slides if we can get that information. The particular topic that Commissioner Duvia brought up is there's a lot of complexity to answering the question about what happens if that initiative passes that will take us a long time to go through. I'm not sure we've fully explored all the ramifications and consequences of that happening. It's a great question. I'm not taken away from that at all. But if we have a chance, and I think we do, to go ahead and get the information out to you now, maybe have the, as you suggested, have the Fish Committee talk a little bit about what more information and bring that back as a committee report on Saturday. This one is a complex set of issues.
I fully understand that. I know. Was more just kind of preparing myself for what's coming down.
Yeah, I also had that question, and I think it's one that we need to explore in more detail than we really need to talk about it right now. I would like to see us get through this this presentation so that we can generate some of those questions for a later date, like tomorrow.
I'm fine with that.
Let's get through this. Now, you've sprinkled some fall Chinook in there in the upper river. So we'll start with 89 and then zip through Steelhead as you get back there. Slide 89 is sockeye, just a few on sockeye, and then going to the fall.
Okay. The sockeye fishery is primarily a main stem fishery. In the upper river, saw the map there. So that being main stem, there's two sockeye runs. The Okanagan run by far has eclipsed what used to be the predominant piece of the run, and that was the Lake Wenatchee run, and that was the sockeye fishery in the upper river. I'll talk about that one in a little bit, but just talking about this Okanagan run that Bill was, and the rest of us for that matter are so excited about. It's been the last 2008-2011 that we've really seen these dramatic increases the last 4 years, and if this year pans out, which there's no reason to think it won't be high, if maybe not as high as the forecast, at least another good run. A lot of that's been attributed to habitat and supplementation, primarily up in Canada, habitat expansion, some supplementation programs. But I wanted to mention that I think the hydro coordination that happened, when was that, Bill? Was it all that work?
Much of that was implemented during the 90s, and of course, couldn't see any benefits in the 90s because the ocean conditions were so bad. But we really worked hard at improving downstream migration conditions for summer out migrants like sockeye. They're actually sort of late spring, early summer, and the summer Chinook.
No, it's just sockeye, I think, are one of the runs that really show the benefits of that coordination. I wanted to point that out. So we've got, for the Okanagan harvest, I don't have a graph for this, but there's the last 4 years that we actually had these higher runs. It took a while to take off in terms of harvest, but by 2010 we had harvested almost 11,000 fish in that run. 2011, we were back down. Now, this goes back to what I was talking about in that summer Chinook run. If you got the low water and the thermal block in the Okanagan, those sockeye really stall in the Wells Pool, and they just got hammered. And it was a very, very popular fishery. And even though it was at 11,000 fish, we didn't touch what we might have been able to harvest in there. So more room for expansion there. You get a year like last year, though, unlike the summers, nobody figured out how to catch them anywhere other than the Wells Pool. They come fast. It's fast and furious, and they were up in Canada before we could even get our boats in water. So I think sockeye is going to be more affected by those conditions, whether or not we get a good harvest. We'll see what happens this year. I want to talk about the Lake Wenatchee sockeye fishery. This has been this was the I can't call it perennial, but the main fishery, periodic, yeah, that might be the right word, periodic, the main sockeye fishery anyhow that we had in the upper Columbia and on the Columbia as a whole. There's often a large difference between what we forecast at the mouth and what actually gets to Lake Wenatchee. It's poorly understood how just why there's those discrepancies, what happens to those fish. It's been very hard to predict what the actual return to the Wenatchee is going to be. We have a 23,000 fish escapement, so we need a couple more thousand, 26,000 say, to even consider a fishery. Because if that thing gets, it's a very popular fishery when it opens. And if it opens on a weekend and the weather's nice, we can take out 1,000, 2,000 fish in a day that quick. So with the sporadic seasons and so forth, of course, angler trips and harvest have varied by quite a bit. You see anywhere from two, even on a bad season, though, we're seeing 2,000 trips up there. I mean, they're going to come and try it, even if the wind's blowing to beat you know what. Our harvest, though, you know, if the weather is bad up there, it's way up in the mountains, we might only harvest 1,000, 1,400 fish was a low. 6,500 on a good year, 4,300 average. A little bit about the management on this thing. We wait until these fish are up over Rock Island, and the Okanagan fish have been going over Rocky Reach Dam to get that inner dam count. The mouth of the Wenatchee is in between those two dams, and that tells us roughly how many fish we might expect to get, at least in the Wenatchee River. But even when we get those numbers, we're not certain what we're going to get in Lake Wenatchee. So we have to look at the counts at Tumwater Dam, which is two-thirds of the way up between the Columbia River and Lake Wenatchee. When we get sufficient numbers over Tumwater Dam, that's when we can get serious about opening up that fishery. The map shows you where Lake Wenatchee is. Tumwater Dam is just a little bit above where the icicle comes in. Next slide. A little bit of mislabeling on this slide. That should say 2008 to 2010 average. So on any given year in there, you're looking at these last three bars over here. The average angler trip value was $174,000.
Okay, so
questions?
Commissioner Schmidt?
If Jeff is done, I'd like to add my 2 cents.
Okay.
And that every day that I'm home, I look out at this lake. You know, with the riches that we've had that have come back to the Okanagan, that's the Milkameen, it's just amazing. Your chart, you would really have to have a small scale to not look at the last 2 years of the bar that has gone up. The opposite is true for Lake Wenatchee. The caution lights are on. We're in the yellow zone, without a doubt in my mind. For the last 2 years, we've not met escapement. An example, previous year we had a forecast, recent some forecast of 29,000. when we get a hard count at Tumwater, every fish is seen. Every fish is moved into its trough to head north, or head west, I guess. So we know what the counts are. We got less than 14,000 fish. And again, this year, I'm very suspect that we'll have, in fact, we had two previous years, and then this year, it's pretty marginal whether there would be a fishery. You know, the question is really why. That's a nutrient poor area. There's predation concerns. We truly do need an enumeration study to determine what you have, and the numbers of those fish, whether we have a northern pike minnow population that's growing, a lot of bird impact, and a tremendous amount of bull trout. So a study would help us to see what's happening there. And there's the smitten theory, and that is your Okanagan fish average about 3.5, 3.6 or 7 pounds. Lake Wenatchee fish are going about 4.5, maybe 4.6, 4.7. And, you know, is there a possibility that those fish are more susceptible to downriver gillnet activities, primarily in the tribal intercept fisheries, given the gillnet size, which are gearing for both springers and steelhead? And that's something that, you know, I've been advocating at least we ought to take a look at, because with one run exploding and the other run declining, something is happening.
Okay. Okay, let's move on. Fall season fisheries.
Go to the next slide. So this summarizing our fall management constraints, we have ESA listed Snake River Fall Chinook, Lower Columbia Fall Chinook, Steelhead, and Coho. I just want to point out the ESA limit for Lower Columbia Chinook and Lower Columbia Coho are impact rates that are shared with the ocean fisheries. Our management approach is to have discussions through the North of Falcon process for sharing the conservation burden. We have marked selective fisheries, sport fisheries for Coho and Steelhead, time area and gear for commercial fisheries, and time area closures for sport fisheries and commercial fisheries. This shows the different management stocks. The first four are lower river stocks, the next three are upriver stocks. And yeah, they're about half and half, listed and non-listed. The next slide is our timeline.
The upriver bright group includes that large, healthy, naturally spawning population in the Hanford Reach.
Thank you.
Pardon? What did you say?
This bottom code here, URB, upriver bright, that includes the large, healthy, spawning population in the Hanford Reach.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You can skip that one. And I'll move up from the estuary, starting in the estuary with the Buoy 10 fishery. It targets on Coho and Chinook. It's open generally, next slide, from August through December. Most of the harvest occurs just during the last 2 weeks in August. It became popular in the early 1990s. Most of the Coho sport harvest occurs in this fishery. Very little sport Coho catch in the upper river. Coho is caught here, and that's that plus our tributaries is where Coho are caught. This fishery, as all of our fisheries, has been constrained primarily by Lower River Chinook ESA impacts. And our goal is, at least in recent years, is to try to get Chinook retention allowed at least through Labor Day. And that's our current regulations for 2012. So hopefully that will stay in place. Very popular fishery, but angler trips have decreased, and that's pretty much coincident with Coho. It used to be very big Coho fishery when it began, and it switched over to more of a Chinook fishery. Also, you can switch slides. Also, the Coho harvest and the runs have declined. Chinook harvest here has also gone down somewhat from some of those. Well, those were some really outstanding years. You can see 42,000 caught in this, in probably about two to three weeks in 1987. We were looking at some record runs in that year as well. The 97 to 2011 average is 10,000 Chinook for that fishery. Coho is a lot more sporadic, but we've had part of the reason for the decline in angler trips is the decline in the coho abundance and just harvest availability for this fishery. Buoy 10 needs big coho run sizes to be productive, and we haven't had very many of those recently. Moving upstream, the fishery below Bonneville Dam occurs from the Rocky Point Tongue Point line upstream to Bonneville Dam. It's open August through December. Used to be warm water hindered the anglers from really being able to catch Chinook very effectively, but they figured out how to do that. And as a result, we've seen angler trips and Chinook catches increase exponentially in this fishery. We've had some recent year area restrictions for ESA protection. This is the graph of the harvest. You can see, I mean, historic, until the late 1990s, it was less than 5,000 fish a year, and then things turned around, and we had a record high in 2011 of, I think it was 28,000 Chinook harvested in this fishery. And the average, I don't have the average. Angler trips as well, you can draw the trend line on there, and it's an increasing trend. Angler trips have increased from an average of 41,000 trips in the 1980s, 54 trips in the 90s, and average in the 2000s of 94,000. So they've more than doubled since the 1980s, and 2011 was 147,000 angler trips. Commercial fisheries traditionally occurred during the early fall and late fall. The early fall fisheries targeted Chinook, and the late fall fisheries targeted coho. We had steelhead catch occurring until 1975. Seasons have been vastly reduced since 1992 with the ESA listing, and the recent fisheries are severely restricted by area. Commercial harvest here on this graph from 1970 through 89, so the 70s and 80s, the average harvest was 138,000 fall Chinook. From 1990 forward, it's 23,500. So you can see a big decrease in the fisheries. Tributary fall Chinook, below Bonneville. Most of our tributaries that have hatcheries on them are open for fall Chinook. And same above Bonneville. That's the total tributary harvest. It can be, you know, fairly significant in some years. Select area fisheries for fall Chinook, moving that another map showing the select areas and harvest fall Chinook. Again, you see a very similar pattern to what you saw with spring Chinook, where Young's Bay has most of the harvest. Blind Slough is number two, and the Deep River on top of the green is pretty small. Coho is a little better for Deep River. Deep River gets a bigger proportion. Again, Young's Bay, the biggest share, but it's the biggest area. It's really the only area that will fit any really number of boats. There was a question earlier about why there wasn't more fish in Deep River or something. But anyway, these maps, the colored part shows the fishing area, and Young's Bay is down near Astoria in Oregon, and so you can see the brown shading is a fishing area. The next slide shows the Tongue Point South Channel area, and I know there was a question about jurisdiction. Can you go back stop, go back, up, forward, stop there. See, that, right where the word blind slough is, I think that's supposed to represent a railroad bridge. And so that piece up upstream of the railroad bridge is Oregon waters, and the rest are joint waters. But you can see the darkened area is the fishing area. And then on Deep River, the same is true. You can see a dashed line there. And in the spring, we have some differences in the shared boundaries. But you can see how, you know, it's a fairly small, skinny. It's not real wide. It can't, doesn't fit a lot of boats in there. And then skip a few things so we find Falls Chinook again. So this is Main Stem Falls Chinook, Bonneville to McNary Dam. This is one of our fisheries that is not constrained. It opens. It's a two-fish limit. We just set it. We don't. I mean, it's in our pamphlet. We don't have to worry about it because they're not catching enough fish. There's not as many ESA fish, and it's just really nice. Bonneville to McNary. It's not a big one. They fish mostly at the mouths of the tributaries, but it's a nice one. We don't have to manage. And the Indians catch a lot of Falls Chinook over, average probably around 100 to 120,000 in recent years.
Okay.
Wait, John.
Yeah, that's still.
Find another Falls Chinook slide.
So just one slide for Southeast Falls Chinook. From 2003 up to fall 2008, it was closed, primarily obviously due to ESA-related issues for the Snake River. Snake River, Lower Snake River Comp Program mitigation is a significant piece of that is the Falls Chinook piece for production and release. From 2008 to 2010, we were able to work with NOAA Fisheries to get some coverage to do some small little area fishing, primarily for jacks, which is kind of test the water, so to speak, and some limited directed opportunity for adults, but not really too much. Again, around some of these four areas that we talked about earlier relative to the spring chinook fishing. In 2011, we received our new permit from NOAA Fisheries, a 4D permit for the steelhead, and also in that allowed us for incidental opportunity to harvest Falls Chinook. We've seen over the years that the steelhead anglers are catching, you know, hatchery, clipped Falls Chinook, and so this just allows them the opportunity to take those incidental to the steelhead fishery. So anglers are really starting to kind of learn this type of fishery in the Snake. It seems to be really an incidental type of fishery. We've run fisheries in the boundary water areas with Idaho, and again, just really incidental relative to the steelhead fishing. It's there. We're fortunate we're able to allow it for hatchery fish. And in 2011, basically in the boundary water area between Washington, Idaho, and Oregon, 636 adults harvested, a little less than 300 jacks. Half of those were harvested from Washington anglers. So it's a good opportunity for Washington anglers. It is really incidental from our standpoint relative to the steelhead fishery, but still another good opportunity for people to harvest fish.
Well, okay. Back to Region 3. We've got two Falls Chinook fisheries in Region 3. The big one is the Hanford Reach Upriver Bright fishery. This is a, you know, the largest naturally produced Falls Chinook population in the Main Stem Columbia in the 52-mile Hanford Reach. And it is a primary population, very important production area, and it's driving fisheries all the way out into the ocean. But the terminal sport fishery is a big thing in the Tri-Cities area in South Central. The other one I'm showing here is the Lower Yakima River Falls salmon fishery, which is the mouth of the Yakima up to Prosser. And that is a combination of hatchery production from the Yakima Nation, hatchery at Prosser, and wild fish. This is the Yakima fishery. It's primarily a bank fishery, and September and October. It's non-selective because a fair percentage of the hatchery fish aren't marked. They also catch a few coho, but that's pretty minimal, usually less than 100 fish. And there you see, with the exception of 2002, which was a record year, we got a 13 or 14,000 fall chinook return and harvested nearly 2,300 falls. Usually it's running about 500. It's been averaging about 500 fish harvest. The Hanford Reach Fishery, 395 to Priest Rapids. It's a permanent regulation. It's been there forever. Opens August 1, runs through October 22nd, which is about the initiation of spawning in the Hanford Reach and up at Vernita Bar. And it's non-selective, and it remains non-selective because a high proportion are natural origin. We're looking at 80-85% of the return are natural origin fish. And the 15-20% are returning to Priest Rapids Hatchery, which is a Grand County PUD mitigation. Also, we have Corps of Engineers John Day mitigation that's been moved upstream above McNary so that those fish pass through Zone 6 to provide more opportunity for the treaty tribes. And that John Day mitigation occurs at Ringgold and at Priest Rapids. And this is something that we've been working on for quite a while, trying to get all of those hatchery URBs, it's about 10 million release, when you combine the John Day and the Grant County piece, only about 5 million or a little more than that are mass marked. All the Corps of Engineers fish are mass marked. It's the Grant County PUD piece that's been the tough nut to crack. Because the mark rate is low, it's still non-selective. But we want all those fish marked so that we can do proper hatchery reform. You can't identify wild from hatchery fish, and so we can't integrate our natural broodstock into the hatchery population properly. So it's not just a fishery thing. It's also broodstock management that we're trying to achieve. But sport harvest has increased every year since 2006. And it exceeded 12,000 in 2010 and 14 last year. Anglers are getting very good at catching fall chinook, and effort and catch peanut effort is increasing. So it's a fantastic fishery. That's a nice one. That's a 35 pounder there. So let's see. Okay, that says 11 and 12. I thought I said 12 and 14. I'm not sure exactly why that shows that difference, but you can see it's a popular fishery and getting more productive over time. Our escapement goal is about 29,000 fish, and we commonly get 50, 60, 70,000 fish returning to the reach. Most years we exceed the escapement goal. It's only been a couple years that we haven't. 207 being one. 207 was the last year I think we didn't make the escapement goal. Anything else there, Bill?
The only thing I would add is that this was probably one of the last recreational fisheries that actually was not directly tied to, for good reasons. It had been stable, and we were always getting over escapements, and it didn't seem to be a problem, but it was never directly tied to an escapement goal, nor did it have any in-season management. It doesn't need that every year, but John and his staff, Paul Hofarth, a couple of years ago, just sort of realized that ultimately that's not a good thing, and developed a really good, simple escapement goal-based management plan for that. To my knowledge, that was the last fishery in the Columbia that didn't have a clear connection. It had never posed a conservation issue. So
they're non-listed, and it's a very healthy run. But the reason that we went that way is because the lower river, the management for Fall Chinook is based on a target escapement at McNary. And what was happening is that as the Snake River production came on and the Snake River proportion increased, they kept the escapement target at McNary the same, and higher percentage were turning off and going up the Snake, and so we were getting fewer fish back to the reach. And so they have bumped up the escapement goal to McNary to kind of compensate for increased turnoff into the Snake, and then we've implemented the kind of the minimum escapement goal of 29,000, and
there's flexibility for the future. But Paul Hofarth, he's the key staff person, and John deserve a lot of credit for sort of proactively seeing a potential problem. And again, this is the single largest healthiest naturally spawning population of Fall Chinook in the lower 48, and it exists above four dams.
Right.
So taking that extra care, I thought that was a great thing they did.
Commissioner Jennings?
So, backing up your comment about the PUD hatchery not marking their fish, so what's the timeline for them to get them on board with the program?
Yeah, you
want to. It's not just the PD. Everybody's got to agree. Remember
Fives.
The original slides about all the folks involved. So the U.S. Oregon parties have to agree as well. This last year, we worked really hard, got agreement to ratchet up the marking another significant amount, and to the point where we're somewhere over 50%. And the commitment to continue those discussions. And as well, we're working with the PUD to ensure that our ultimate decision on marking offers the best support for good, solid, integrated rootstock management. Again, we're running a hatchery program, a supplementation-based, integration-based hatchery program next to the largest healthy natural population. And so we want to be really careful. And so we want to make sure that our marketing strategy as well. So, and it's not necessarily the ad clip, it's probably the ad clip, but we want to finish looking at use of otoliths and other things.
Put water tags, they're doing
that. Working through those analyses. And then the hatchery itself is just about to begin a major rebuild, and that's not a time when you want to make some significant changes either. So we're working on the agreements in several forums, and if we can implement those agreements during the reconstruction time period. But right now, it looks like there'll only be power for two trailers working at once, and that's what we've got there right now. So
but the,
it may be a little stymied by construction, too, but we've been working. It's one of our highest priorities.
The tribes have not been supportive. And so, and I think Grant kind of plays them against us, but the tribes have been an obstacle to getting, you know, fully marked. They don't want to see them mass marked. But what we do know is that our proportion of natural fish in the broodstock is really low. It's like 2-3%. And our target is to get the proportion of natural origin broodstock up to about 40%. But to be able to do that, we have to be able to identify them in real time. And what we've been doing lately is otolith marking. That's what the PUD wanted to do. But that makes it really difficult to do real-time brood stock management. So
I think Commissioner Carpenter had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Cindy or Bill, I guess I have a geographic question. I was just looking at economics here. But on comparing slide 100 to slide 106, obviously, when you're talking about Bowie-Tan, you're talking about from the Astoria-Megler Bridge down to Bowie-Tan. When you're talking on 106 from below Bonneville, angler ships, is that from Bonneville down to the bridge, or is that again from Bonneville down to Bowie-Tan?
So Bowie-Tan is
from the buoy up to the Rocky Point Tongue Point line.
Okay.
Below Bonneville is from the Rocky Point Tongue Point up to Bonneville Dam.
Okay. Thank you. I knew it'd be fast.
Okay. Director Anderson?
There was a fair amount of diplomacy used in answering Commissioner Jennings' question, which is appropriate. And we have tried to use really solely our diplomatic skills to get an agreement to mark 100% of the Priest Rapids production. We have tried using that strategy for a number of years, three or four years, without really any measurable movement or success in that by using that approach. There's a dispute resolution mechanism within USV Oregon that we chose to change our strategy this year to see if we could get some progress made and have those discussions within the USV Oregon forum and utilize the dispute resolution mechanism in that. And so took a little bit, quite a bit stronger, I guess, approach to try to get some movement on the issue. And I think, and we were successful in getting some forward progress made, as John said and Bill said. So it's a high priority for us. We continue to work that issue hard. It's been an extremely difficult one, very frustrating for us, frankly, because we've worked really hard on it and not made much progress until the last 6 months or so when we changed strategies.
Okay, last slide.
This is the summary slide for Fall Chinook. It shows that our conservation objective, and John mentioned this, we manage for an escapement goal of 60,000 at McNary Dam, and we've averaged 155,000. Snake River wild harvest rate has been 10.7 compared to 10.5. That's an average. And the Lower Columbia Tule exploitation rate, 36.7 compared to the limit of 37.7. Total sport harvest, 137,500. And it shows what's included. And the total commercial harvest of 172,000 shows main stem and safe. That's it.
We did it. You did a great job. Thanks so much for working with us to shuffle things around. That was quite a marathon. What do you think? Did you absorb all that? Okay.
We really didn't expect you to. What we wanted to do was give you enough of a sense of who to ask for further questions. We wanted to give you a reference packet. As you can tell, we're all actually pretty excited about a lot of these things we're working on. We'd like to talk about it. So please do view us as a resource. Hopefully the reference packet will help. Please ask for additional written. We can supply copious amounts. We've been at times frustrated by our inability to sort of paint the larger picture, and so we were really excited about the opportunity to have this amount of time and try to present. And again, you only saw one of the H's, and we live in an all-H world. And we tried to give you some sense of how this H fits into the other H's.
Director Anderson?
So just, I'm sure it's obvious to everybody how complex set of fisheries and the geographic area that this covers and the interactions between all the fisheries. And just my compliments to this crew here. Pat Frazier would be in that, included in that, as well as Guy Norman and others that are staff members that work with these folks here. But it requires an a really strong working relationship across the regions and across fisheries in order to make this all fit together and work. And just my compliments to these folks and the and their colleagues that they work with in the job that they do.
Yeah, well, so we need to go into recess now, but I wanted to thank you too. I know you're coming from a long distance too, and this is late. So thanks very much for your patience with us. Very good job. I think Commissioner Perry's going to want to know, when are you going to recover the ESA-listed fish? but we'll figure out some more questions for you in the coming days. So, okay, let's recess.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We can leave.